From WXXI News, this is Unleashed, the pet show on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Well, welcome to Unleashed, the pet show. It's the third Friday of the month. It's always the third Friday of the month, first hour. Glad to be back with Unleashed, the pet show, and it's the show talking about pets and their people. I am Evan Dawson, and in studio today we have Dr. Brenda Buck from the Animal Hospital of Rochester, and this hour is going to fly by. So if you have a question about your pets, you can ask Dr. Buck a question. We'd love to hear from you. You can call toll-free 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI right here in Rochester, 263-9994. You can also tweet at us, send your question to the hashtag Unleashed if you like. And again, because the hour is going to go quickly, if you have any questions about your pets you'd like answered, I would get moving on making a phone call now. Dr. Buck, nice to have you. You only had to drive about 5 minutes, you said, to come on over, right?
That's right, Evan. Thanks for having me. My practice is right up the street on University Avenue.
And you opened just a few years ago now.
Yeah, we're going into our fourth year.
And you are someone with plenty of animals at home and now plenty of animals at work. How's it going?
It's going well. We're excited to be in the city and meeting the needs of the neighborhood there.
One of the things we were talking about before the hour began is what is coming up next week. And Dr. Buck said something that shouldn't have surprised me, but I found it interesting. You said the day after Thanksgiving.
That's right, Evan. The day after Thanksgiving tends to be a very busy time for veterinarians because while we like to partake in food and treats, we feel bad for our animals and like to help them out too and give them lots of treats.
And too many.
Too many.
So what's typical the day after Thanksgiving? I mean, it's one thing for an animal to overeat. If you overeat, you know, you don't feel very well. But to end up at the vet, it's quite another thing. What do you usually see?
We see a lot of vomiting and diarrhea.
Wow.
Especially when fatty foods are given, like drippings from the pan or skin from the turkey, can really upset your pet's stomachs.
Do you put a hard limit on it? Do you just say don't do it at all? Or is it, you know, sort of moderation, be careful?
Well, you can't say don't do it at all because realistically we're going to give pets treats. But what we give them is important. Vegetables are fine. A little bit of turkey breast is fine. Maybe a little bit of plain pasta or bread. But we don't want to give them the fatty things.
Skin from the turkey.
Skin from the turkey is really bad. A lot of the fat is stored in the skin, and that can actually cause the GI upset, diarrhea, can even cause pancreatitis, especially in small dogs.
But they love skin from the turkey.
Yes, they do.
Does that mean, by the way, that we probably should be eating less skin from the turkey?
Probably not.
Probably, yeah. All right, so skin from the turkey is a no-no. Again, you said drippings, especially fat, bad idea.
Yes, very bad idea.
A lot of people will do turkey bones.
Turkey bones are a bad idea, too, as they can splinter and they can cause obstructions and get stuck in the esophagus or even in the stomach, so we want to avoid those as well.
Oh, boy, oh, boy. You do see that?
I do see that.
What do you do about it?
Usually we just treat symptomatically and hope they pass. Sometimes they get really, really sick. We have to put them on medications to prevent vomiting, put them on fluids to prevent dehydration or restore fluid balance. So it's best just to avoid it.
Do you ever need to do surgery for something like that?
Usually not for bones, but occasionally, especially with Christmas coming, we see ingestion of a lot of things that we do have to do surgery for.
Now, speaking of Christmas coming, you know, at the end of next week, a lot of people will move right into the season of decorating. We had some friends who over the years they've had a Swiss Mountain Dog, a Swissie. Beautiful, beautiful dog.
They are beautiful.
And she ate almost anything. She had three different trips to the Geneva Animal Hospital for eating plastic bags, things like that. I mean, and my understanding, I mean, I think it's obvious, but my understanding is some of those things are particularly dangerous. They get wrapped up in the animal system. And I'm thinking about things like tinsel.
Tinsel's a big one, especially with cats. It's very shiny, sparkly. They like to play with it. And unfortunately, it can cause what we call linear foreign body. So things can still pass, but it causes the intestines to bunch up. And that can be a life-threatening condition.
What would you do in a cat situation for that?
That's surgery, and often emergency surgery.
That is surgery. You've had to do it.
I've had to do it.
The cats I had growing up used to love to eat ribbon.
That's another one.
Is that similar to tinsel in terms of a risk?
Very similar. Very similar. Yep.
Because not to be too graphic here, but they passed the ribbon pretty normally. We would see it.
Well, they got lucky because they had little pieces, but sometimes they get chewing, and if they swallow and they keep swallowing, they get a long strand, it can get hung up in the stomach and not make its way all the way through.
All right. So don't let them eat tinsel and a ribbon. Very much avoid that. And next week, Avoid the fatty stuff. Avoid the bones. Avoid the skin from the turkey. A little bit of plain pasta, you said. A little bit of bread.
Plain bread, no butter, anything greasy. You know, little turkey breast is fine. Go for the white meat. It has less fat in it than the dark meat.
White meat has less fat than the dark meat. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. See, I thought the dark meat was leaner. And mashed potatoes.
Without the gravy and butter.
But they love the gravy.
And veterinarians love seeing your pet.
Yeah, that's a good point. All right. And, you know, cranberry sauce, things like that?
Things that don't have a lot of sugar. The vegetables, if you're having green beans, not the green bean casserole, but plain steamed green beans. Vegetables are actually great treats for dogs.
Okay.
And cats if they'll eat them.
And pumpkin pie?
Let's avoid the pumpkin pie.
Let's avoid the pumpkin pie. Okay. Dr. Brenda Buck is here from the Animal Hospital of Rochester. I've been reminded in the last time we talked, I think about a month on the show, a month ago on this program, I was supposed to ask this question and I missed it, and this is even more timely. Poinsettias. Are they toxic concern for animals?
Actually, they are toxic. They get a lot of hype about their toxicity. Fortunately, if your cat or dog chews on poinsettia leaves, the worst that happens is a little bit of GI upset. If they eat a lot of poinsettia leaves, it can make them quite sick.
But do they want to? Is there something they're drawn to about the poinsettia specifically?
Cats are drawn to plants in general. They like to chew on the leaves
of
live plants.
So you're more concerned with a cat eating a poinsettia than a dog?
Much more concerned. They tend to go after them more than the dogs do.
Okay. So a cat's going to nibble on them. If you notice your cat has been eating poinsettia, just monitor. What would you do?
Definitely monitor for vomiting and diarrhea. And if you notice any GI upset, go ahead and call your vet.
Okay. How often do you see that?
Couple times every season, at least.
Yeah. Okay. Well, if you've got questions or comments throughout the hour, we're going to take them for Dr. Brenda Buck from the Animal Hospital of Rochester. It's 844-295-TALK, toll-free 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Does the Animal Hospital of Rochester limit to cats and dogs, smaller animals?
No, we actually see what we consider pocket pets, so bunnies and ferrets. Occasionally we see reptiles, and a couple weeks ago we even had a goat in there.
You had a goat?
We had a goat.
And how's the goat?
Goat's doing well. Goat got stepped on by a horse, but all fixed up.
All right, so another one of our listeners, Joel, bringing some other foods and things regarding pets eating. So let's go down this list here. He writes, onions, garlic.
Onions and garlic are actually quite bad in pets. They can cause something called Heinz body anemia and make your pet quite sick, so you do want to avoid that.
Avocado,
I kept mentioning fat. Avocado is high in fat, and so we want to avoid those as well.
Dark chocolate
is higher in xanthine, which is the toxic component that makes pets sick, so it's much worse than light chocolate, but even if they eat enough of milk chocolate, they can get sick. Kind of depends on the weight of the pet and how much chocolate they ingest.
Okay. Dark is worse, though, you said.
Dark is worse, okay. Yep. Contains more of the toxic component.
And Joel writes, Tylenol and xylitol.
Tylenol and xylitol are both very bad. Tylenol is very, very dangerous in cats. One Tylenol can actually kill a cat, so you never want to give a cat Tylenol. And it can cause some liver damage and kidney damage in dogs. Xylitol we see in gum, and we're actually starting to see it in some peanut butters, and that can cause liver failure in dogs.
Okay. Let's get to the phones. And Renee in Fairport first up with Dr. Brenda Buck. Go ahead, Renee.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My sister has a one-year-old poodle that is male, and she's going to be taking it to a new friend's house, and she wanted to know if there was any way to stop the dog from marking inside the house.
Is the dog neutered?
I believe it is.
Okay. So in one day, if this is just visiting or going away for the holidays, it's probably unlikely that they're going to prevent marking if the dog already marks in its own house. The best thing to do is go to the pet store, and there's little belly bands that you can put little, almost like little diapers in them, and put that around the dog's abdomen and catch the urine so at least it's not getting on the furniture.
Oh, very good. Okay, yeah, she was told them to maybe just bring a crate and keep the dog in the crate in the friend's house, and she really didn't want to do that, or she was just going to keep the dog next to her on a leash and watch it carefully.
That's also an option for sure.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you, Renee. Thanks for the phone call, Renee. Tom in Rochester is next up. Go ahead, Tom.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is, we have a five-month-old Maltese puppy. Every time I take him outside, he's obsessed with eating the crab apples that fall off the tree, particularly at nighttime when I can't see what he's eating. Is that as bad for him?
Crab apples will cause a little bit upset tummy if he's eating too many of them. Apple slices are fine, but again, in moderation. So watch him closely for vomiting.
All right, great. Thank you so much for helping.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Tom. On Twitter already here, Jen writes to us, Dr. Buck is fantastic. So happy to hear her on the show. She's taken such great care of our little dog, Emma. We love her. And Carrie writes, for your veterinarian, I've got a 9-month-old beagle rescue. She sleeps with me, but burrows under all of the blankets. I don't understand how he can breathe there, and is that potentially unhealthy?
It's not unhealthy. I actually have a little boxer who does the exact same thing, and I wonder how she breathes, but she lives every day just fine.
I assume Carrie's instinct is understandable, and you probably wouldn't want to fully seal off anything down there, but animals do love that. I mean, we even have a cat who used to burrow down under our legs under the blankets, which is odd.
It's nice and warm. They like to be next to you, so it's nothing to worry about. If you're fine with it, it's fine.
I have one etiquette question before we get to our first break for Dr. Buck. My wife and I have an ongoing debate. See, cats don't do a whole lot to contribute to the household, right? I mean, they're great pets. We love our cats. We've had cats forever. I love them. But, you know, they're kind of takers, right? And they've got, you know, quite an attitude. But what they provide are warm spots on the bed. So my view is that's what I'm entitled to. When I get in bed and the cat has created this warm spot in the cold, I'm allowed to nudge the cat out of the way and take that warm spot. My wife says, no, you must contort into a pretzel. And the cat owns the bed. Who is right?
Your wife. You're not going to win this argument.
Oh. Those warm spots are gold in the winter.
They are. Just pull the cat in a little closer to you then.
All right. Well, if you want to join the conversation or take a side in this one, you can call 844-295-TALK. Dr. Brenda Buck is here from the Animal Hospital of Rochester. 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. There are times I wonder just how radiative cats are. I mean, their properties, I don't think science can measure how great those warm spots are in the winter. So I'm still going to take them. We're going to get a short break in. We've got much more with Dr. Buck and some great stories coming up, including a family grateful for their chihuahua. All of that and more coming up on Unleash the Pet Show. Coming up in our second hour, it's Second Opinion Live and a new edition of Fact or Fiction. Our doctors on the panel will take your questions on fact or fiction about food, especially around the holidays. What are the myths and what are the realities of eating and overeating for Thanksgiving, Christmas, and beyond? It's next hour, Fact or Fiction, Second Opinion Live.
Support for your public radio station comes from our members and from the financial advisors of the Sartini Group at Morgan Stanley, 585-987-6053. Investments and services are offered through Morgan Stanley Smith Barney, LLC, member SIPC. From Natural Pet Foods Company, helping people make diet choices for their pets, offering frozen and grain-free foods and foods for pets with special needs. 766 Clinton Avenue in the South Wedge, naturalpetfoodscompany.com. And All Cats Care Center, a full-service feline veterinary hospital, offering medical and surgical care and boarding. All Cats Care Center, where cats come first. More online at allcatscarecenter.com.
Welcome back to Unleash the Pet Show on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Dr. Brenda Buck is here from the Animal Hospital of Rochester. I want to sneak in another phone call, and this is Rose in Rochester. Go ahead, Rose.
Hi, yes. I really enjoy your show.
Thanks.
And I have two cats that are a little over a year old, and I've owned cats before, and they are tearing up my house with the clawing. I have nice scratching posts. I use a catnip. I use the squirt guns. I am actually thinking about getting them declawed, and I know a lot of people frown upon that What is your take on this?
Hi, Rose. That's a good question. If we can avoid declawing, that's the best. And it's hard to believe, but cats can be trained. It's good that you've got the scratching posts. If you can use some different types of scratching posts, vertical and horizontal, carpet and cardboard, keep using the catnip, those can all help. And there's even a thing called soft paws that you can use. I have them on my own cats. You trim their nails and they're soft little plastic caps that you can glue right onto their toenails and come in lots of fun sparkly colors.
I don't think they're going to let me do that.
You could... Even at my practice, we've had clients that have had the same problem, and they've purchased the soft paws, and we've put them on for them. So you could even contact your veterinarian or even contact our office, and we'd be happy to help you with that.
Okay. Well, I guess I'll try that before I do the other method. Is it true, though, if you get your cats declawed, they might stop using the litter box and go outside of it?
Typically not. If they are doing it, it's usually stress-related. Certainly, declawing can cause a lot of pain, and if they are painful using the substrate when they're healing, that can cause them to not use the litter box. So pain management, if you do go down that road, making sure that the veterinarian that does it really manages their pain adequately is going to be very important.
Rose, thank you so much for the phone call. Our phones are lighting up. If you are on the phone waiting to talk to Brenda Buck, just hang in there. We're going to get to more phone calls throughout the hour. I just want to say briefly, before anybody gets upset with what I said before, Dr. Buck did point out during the break, the cat provides more than just a warm spot. Love. And if I would never doubt that. And I was just making fun of our beautiful two little cats that we have. They're not that little, and they are wonderful, and my wife and I are actually big animal softies, so no question about that. Please nobody give me any grief about that comment, because we love our cats. Let's talk about dogs for a second. Dogs play such an important role in our families and in our homes. They, of course, give us unconditional love, more obviously than cats. It's just true.
I'll give you that.
Companionship from dogs and a lot more. For a family in Leroy, New York, that so much more, by the way, was saving their lives. WXXI's Veronica Volk visited the Hunter family and brings us their remarkable story.
So this story starts with a girl named Rachel.
Hi, I'm Rachel Hunter.
Who went into a pet store 2 weeks before her 16th birthday.
I saw this little dog and it was so tiny and she was brown. She had the color of like a little fox, like a little fawn or fox. She was so light. And she was so teensy. And I was just like, I want this dog. And so I called her. She was somewhere else in the mall.
And I said, absolutely not. We're not getting a puppy. We're not getting a puppy.
This is Rachel's mom.
Hi, I'm Maria Hunter.
Maria caught up with Rachel at the pet store, and the rest is history.
I went over and took one look at her, and it was like, nope, we gotta have her. She was a beautiful little, tiny little thing.
That first meeting at the pet store was about 6 years ago.
She's gonna lick you to death.
What's her name?
Ayaya.
Ayaya. Ayaya, a Chihuahua mix, is a little bit bigger now and rounder. The hunters guess she's maybe 16 pounds. But she has the same markings that Rachel fell in love with. Light brown fur, white chest and paws, and a white strip down her forehead. When you call her name, only one of her ears pops up. But Maria says her best asset is her personality.
She's very loving, very cuddly, wants to lick you all the time, wants to be with you.
Not everyone was immediately sold on the dog. Maria's husband, Bill, took some convincing.
At first he's like, you bought a puppy and you paid $600 for a dog? Are you kidding me?
You get a beagle for free.
Basically, but now he loves her. He really does. She's part of our family.
It should be noted that the Hunters are not what you would call little dog people. They already had a German Shepherd named Max, and Rachel didn't actually set out in search of a Chihuahua.
I've always wanted Dalmatian and a Doberman or a Great Dane.
Ayaya could not be farther from a Great Dane, but she's not your typical toy breed either. For example, Maria says she's not really a yipper.
Ayaya is not. She's just not. She will bark when someone comes to the door or something like that, but she doesn't just start barking for no reason and not stop.
Which brings us to the night of December 2nd, 2014. Rachel had recently moved back into her parents' house to save some money.
it's weird. I felt kind of sick that night. I remember, like, I got home from work, I made dinner, and then I felt kind of nauseous, and I just didn't feel good. And then I went to bed.
About 2 o'clock in the morning, I woke up and heard my dog growling, and she was sleeping with us.
Maria is half asleep, and at first she thinks it's nothing. Aiea probably heard the cat come in or something, but the dog just keeps making noise and faces.
I actually saw the moonlight come through my window, and I saw her teeth, and she was making this really weird noise, and then all of a sudden she just started growling, and then she started yipping, and that's when it all kind of, it happened real quick, but that's when I sat up, and they knew something's not right.
Maria hears another sound, fire.
The roar is unbelievable, like a freight train.
Their house was engulfed in flames. There was smoke everywhere. And the fire had taken out the circuit breaker, so none of the alarms went off.
So I just started screaming to my husband that was totally sound asleep.
And then I heard my mom scream, Bill, the roof's on fire. And I sat up and I was like, am I sleeping? Am I dreaming? Or is this really happening?
We just basically ran for the front door and started screaming for Rachel to get down, you know, because we knew she was upstairs.
And then I heard her start screaming, Rachel, get out of the house. So I got up and I put on a pair of sweatpants and I put on my Carhartt. And
Rachel likes to say that at this point, they did nothing right. Everything they tell you to do in the case of a fire, they did the opposite. They didn't get near the ground to avoid smoke inhalation. They left all the doors open. But still, Rachel kept her head. She grabbed her purse, money, her phone, and keys.
And she came down and we went out the front door. And as we went out the front door, my front porch was coming down. Outside, we realized that the whole back of the house was glowing and everything just had like an orange tinge.
Then the whole garage was on fire. The whole roof of the house is on fire. The fire was shooting out of the chimney.
Rachel, Maria, and her husband all made it safely out of the house, along with Aiea and Max. They huddled together in the street, waiting for the fire department to show up, and watched as the flames grew and spread.
The minute we walked out that door and saw how bad the house was on fire, that's when I realized if it wasn't for her.
Her, of course, is Aiea. That night, the hunters lost everything, including their two cats, Sicily and Bear. But they were alive, and they were together, and there was no doubt in anyone's mind who they have to thank for that.
We would have never woke up. We wouldn't have even known it was going on. Because both my husband and I are both very sound sleepers. If she hadn't started growling when she did, no.
That's Veronica Volk bringing us that remarkable story. And I want to bring in Dr. Brenda Buck. First of all, my guess is, as a veterinarian, you're not surprised to hear animals are doing things like that for people, saving lives. I mean, animals really are. I don't know if we give them enough credit for sensing the world around them. What do you think?
I have to agree 100%. I have a client that was actually, his life was saved by his boxer that he adopted from the shelter who sniffed out cancer. He was a young guy and he had colon cancer. And so it's pretty remarkable how amazing animals can affect people.
Their sense of smell is a little bit better than ours.
Just a little.
Orders of magnitude better, which probably tweaks them out during holidays when they are smelling what we're making in the kitchen. Do you think they enjoy that, or do you think it's an overwhelming thing for them?
Considering that most of us do indulge our pets a bit, I think they enjoy it.
And I have to ask you, just because that's a great family sharing their story, we're not here to criticize. I'm just observing. I've never heard of a 16-pound chihuahua. That's a biggie.
Well, I'll give it the benefit of the doubt because they said it was a chihuahua mix.
A chihuahua
so hopefully
mix.
It's mixed with something that's bigger than your average chihuahua.
You know, like a tractor trailer.
Or a beagle.
I'm just kidding. What a great family and what a great story. And Veronica did a wonderful job telling that story. If you want to call the program, you can weigh in on what you heard. If you have questions for Dr. Brenda Buck, we'll fit in a few more questions. She's here from the Animal Hospital of Rochester. And waiting to join the conversation has been Mark in Rochester. Go ahead, Mark.
Hey, yeah, hi. Evan, big fan of the show.
Thanks.
Interesting topic as ever, and great guest. So I have two cats. They're both female. One is about 10 years old, and the other is just about a year old now. And since we brought the little one home, they just really have not gotten along. And we thought maybe, you know, time will help them become at least somewhat amicable with one another. But if anything, it's gotten worse. And I was wondering if there was anything that we could do to possibly remedy this.
Well, Mark, before we kick it over to Dr. Buck, what do you mean by gotten worse?
Well, like they can't be in each other's presence. The older one specifically just starts growling, and then they turn to fisticuffs.
Hmm. Dr. Buck, stay on the line, Mark. Go ahead, Dr. Buck.
Thanks, Mark. That's a common problem with introducing a new kitten into our younger cat into an already established household. There's a lot of things you can do to help minimize the stress. Oftentimes, an older cat can have things like arthritis or things that are painful. So certainly having your older cat checked by the veterinarian and making sure that it's not painful can help. As far as the kitten goes or the younger cat, they're pretty rambunctious. They want to play. And so making sure that they have outlets and things to engage them, entertain them, and keep them playful. And I hate to say it, but sometimes even another kitten or getting two at once when you have an older cat can be helpful because then they have a playmate and leave the older cat alone. You can also make sure that they have high places to get, so cat trees, so that they can get up. That reduces stress. And even calming collars, which are pheromone collars, can help reduce stress as well.
Mark?
Okay. Thank you.
Well, good luck, Mark. We have actually heard that on previous programs, so it must be a common problem, especially when you've got an age gap in animals. So good luck. Good advice from Dr. Buck. Let's get in another phone call. Deanna in Rochester. Go ahead, Deanna.
Hi. I was wondering if Dr. Buck could share any information she has about essential oils, specifically diffusing them in the air and how they react, or if it's safe or not to do that around cats.
Thank you, Deanna. Go ahead, Dr. Buck.
Thanks, Deanna. I know essential oils are becoming very common and very popular right now, and certainly some herbal therapies are actually really good with cats and dogs. I would be careful with cats just because their respiratory system is so sensitive, and very strong odors can actually bother them or make them have trouble breathing. It's something that you can do, but just use it with caution and make sure that it's not really, really heavy scents that you're putting into the environment.
Let me ask you one quick question before we get to a short break here, and that's the practice of laser therapy. You do some laser therapy?
Love laser therapy.
And I actually don't know very much about what this is at all, but I was told you do some laser therapy. So just a brief explanation on what that is.
Sure. We have what's called a class 4 medical laser, and we use it for a multitude of things, from arthritis to treating wounds to gum disease. And what the laser does is it helps reduce pain, it increases blood flow, which helps healing, and it also stimulates the cells directly to help the cells heal from right within. So things like chronic arthritis, instead of having to give medications, laser therapy can really help relieve a lot of the pet's pain.
How often are you doing it?
We do laser therapy every day.
Every day, wow.
6 days a week.
Okay. We're going to get a short break and more with Dr. Brenda Buck coming up. Beth Adams from Morning Edition joins us with a special segment as well. And our friends from Pitbulls and Parolees are here as well. They've had a whirlwind week in Rochester visiting animal shelters and hosting events, and now they're in studio with us. So much more to come on Unleashed the Pet Show right here on Connections.
Some folks are really dedicated to trying out new recipes.
So they weren't Doritos, they were homemade Doritos.
What? Wait, dial it back. So are you serious?
They were actually homemade Doritos.
The men behind the blog, The Bitten Word, have ideas for your Thanksgiving table. Tex-Mex green bean casserole, anyone? Later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon at 4 on WXXI.
Support for your public radio station comes from our members and from the financial advisors of the Sartini Group at Morgan Stanley. 585-987-6053. Investments and services are offered through Morgan Stanley Smith Barney, LLC, member SIPC. From Natural Pet Foods Company, helping people make diet choices for their pets, offering frozen and grain-free foods and foods for pets with special needs. 766 Clinton Avenue in the South Wedge, naturalpetfoodscompany.com. And All Cats Care Center, a full-service feline veterinary hospital, offering medical and surgical care and boarding. All Cats Care Center, where cats come first. More online at allcatscarecenter.com.
Welcome back to Unleash the Pet Show here on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. When servicemen and women are called to be deployed, they need to plan for every aspect of their life. They have to say goodbye to their family, of course, their kids, friends. They also have to say goodbye to their pets. And a special organization helps them do that with confidence that they are leaving their dog in kind and responsible hands. In honor of Veterans Day, WXXI's Beth Adams spoke with Amy Merrill of the Rochester chapter of Dogs on Deployment.
For those who are not familiar with Dogs on Deployment, tell us how it works.
We assist all of our military members, their families, and veterans. So when they have a need for a foster for their pet, whether it be a deployment, a PCS move, which is a permanent change of duty station, or a training of some sort, then they would go on to our website, dogsondeployment.org, and fill out their profile. They answer all the questions about their pet. It's not just dogs. It's all pets. We've even had snakes in foster homes. So any of their pets, they go on, they fill out their profile, their pet's name, what type of animal, what breed, and then, you know, are they spayed and neutered, up to date on shots? How long is their commitment? Maybe it's a week, maybe it's a year. But this way, the fosters that receive the alerts that are signed up in our system, they'll receive alerts saying there is a foster need in your area. They can look at it and decide whether or not that's a good fit for them. They contact the service member, or the service member may go on and look for the fosters and contact them. And at that point, they can decide whether it seems like a good fit. If it is, they can choose to meet, and you know, maybe the service member goes to their home to see the home where his pet, his or her pet may be, and maybe they meet somewhere neutral. If they do decide it's going to work, we have a contract that helps protect both parties. So everything's outlined, who's responsible for what vet would they like their pet to go to if needed, monetary responsibilities, all of that information.
Could it be the foster family's responsibility under that agreement to say, you know what, as a gift to you, we're going to cover the veterinary expenses for the animal?
Absolutely. They could absolutely do that. We also do assist our veterans. So if we have a veteran who has a service-related hospitalization, then they can apply for assistance as well. As far as medical care and things like that, we do have a pet chit fund, and that fund is for responsible pet care. So that could be to assist with spay and neuter, to become up to date on vaccines. You know, it's a case-by-case basis. They have to apply for it. So if something happens, there have been plenty of times where a service member is deployed and their pet needs care, such as cancer treatments, etc., and they can apply for that and possibly receive a pet chit grant to help fund those expenses.
Without Dogs on Deployment, without this service linking them to responsible families that are really going to step up and help them take care of their pet, and I can imagine how difficult it must be for them to be off in some foreign land.
Yes.
Not have to think about their pet. It's a big relief for them. But without this service, what would they be left with? Would they have to go on Craigslist or just
yes.
try to talk to people that they know in the community?
Yes, and if oftentimes they would relinquish their pet to a shelter because they get down to a day or two before deployment, they don't have anyone else to take their pet, and it's heartbreaking because they know they're going to come back and their pet's not going to be there for them, and it's very possible their pet would be put to sleep while they're gone. Unfortunately, the one case I heard of, the soldier actually found a foster home on Craigslist, and he was gone for about a year. When he came back, he went to the foster family, and they told him just a few days after he left, they decided it wasn't working, and they took his dog to the shelter. So he followed up with the shelter, went to find his dog, and they told him that no one had adopted his dog, so his dog had been euthanized.
So, how incredibly heartbreaking.
Yes, it is. Absolutely.
How big of a need do we have in our area for this service?
You know, it's going to fluctuate. We do have a Coast Guard station right in our area. A lot of people aren't aware. We have reserve units. We have various military in our area, trainers, recruiters, etc., that may have to go for a training. We have a large veteran population in our community that also can be serviced by this program. And since I founded the chapter in August of 2014, we've had 25 pets in New York in our foster program.
And do you need families right now to go online and register to be foster families?
Yes.
Is that always a need?
It's always a need. To be foster families, to help volunteer at events, at fundraising events, just to go sit at a table, help me make phone calls or gather information. There's a lot of different ways. So if they can't foster, there are other ways they can help us as well.
What do you hear from the volunteers? What is the experience like for them when they take a pet in?
They love it. They love that they're helping our military, because our military is out there protecting our freedoms. They're putting their lives on the line, and they love that they can help our military. Even though sometimes it's heartbreaking for them to relinquish the pet when the military owner returns, they love the reunions and say it's all worthwhile when they see the reunion.
I would have a problem relinquishing the pet. That would be me. Well, it's wonderful. Do you think these friendships continue on after the military man or woman returns home?
Yes.
Because that's a real bond. You're taking in someone's, you know, a lot of people look at their pet as a child or a family member.
Yes. And some military members will continue to foster their pet with the same foster home during future commitments. They create this family bond. One lady had a foster for 3 years. And now anytime the military member goes for training, he brings his pet to her. So you do create a family bond, even with the military member.
That's Amy Merrill talking to Beth Adams and their organization, Dogs on Deployment. Since 2012, they found temporary homes for 800 pets nationally. They've donated $138,000 for the veterinary care of pets of military members. And veterans and active duty military members, or those who want to volunteer, can learn more at dogsondeployment.org. Dogsondeployment.org. Dr. Brenda Buck has been with me here for the hour, a veterinarian with the Animal Hospital of Rochester. This piece I thought was great because for me, it's a reminder that family is animals too. We talk about military service members, but, you know, our animals, our dogs. I mean, you have six pets, you know.
I do.
Family, aren't they?
They are. They're my kids.
I mean, imagine if we're going away for 6 months, 9 month deployment, a year. That is like going away. And we can't exactly tell how the animal is impacted. You, as a veterinarian, can probably give us a better sense for how an animal would be impacted by losing an owner temporarily or even permanently.
Sure. This does impact. It actually impacts me personally because I am a veteran, not just a veterinarian. I was in the Navy active duty for 4 years, so kind of close to home with this. And the wonderful thing about our animals is that while it does impact them and they can get depressed, sometimes they don't eat when their service member goes on to deployment because they are family, it can definitely affect them. But the good news is they remember. When you come back, it doesn't matter if it's 6 months or 6 years, they remember you.
Well, let me ask you a separate question as we shift the conversation, Dr. Buck. In your practice, how often do you see pit bulls?
I see pit bulls on a daily basis.
You do?
Absolutely.
And what is your general view of pit bulls?
I love them.
Yeah.
Great dogs.
Yeah, very loyal.
Very loyal, very friendly, very sweet dogs.
They always look like they're smiling to me. I don't know that they always are, even if they accidentally look like they are. But they can get a bad rep, and you've seen that, right?
Yeah, they do get a bad rap, and it's unfortunate. A lot of times when pit bulls are aggressive, it's out of fear, because so often, especially in the city, they don't get the appropriate socialization, especially when they're young. What they experience when they're babies, when they're in that 8 to 16 weeks of age, is so critical. And so, unfortunately, so many of them aren't appropriately socialized. So
it's like the ultimate nature-nurture conversation. And do you believe, Dr. Buck, a pit bull raised as you would a lab or a cocker spaniel generally has the same kind of animal quality, pet quality, temperament?
Absolutely. Yeah. Sometimes even more than certain breeds, which will remain unnamed. I don't want to offend
Let's
anybody.
Let's focus on pit bulls. And I want to welcome our next guest, Lizzie Scolo-Chock. And Mo Chock from Animal Planet's Pit Bulls and Parolees are here. And that's a show that's been on 7 seasons now. In fact, they got in Wednesday. Lizzie, you were saying you drove how many hours?
I think it was about 26.
26 hours driving all the way into Rochester. In fact, you went straight to Lollipop Farm?
Yes.
How'd that go? Wednesday night?
Yes, Wednesday night. It was great. It was a really great experience.
Well, Lizzie and Mo are here. Mo, 7 seasons for Animal Planet's Pit Bulls and Parolees. But for those who haven't seen it, tell us the premise.
Give people a better understanding of what we do and pit bulls in general and how they're missed, seen, or whatever.
Just exactly what we were just talking about.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
And when you say what we do, who's we? Where are you?
The rescue, Villalobos, and all the staff.
The Villalobos rescue, and Lizzie was just telling us a little bit more about what you do there now. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I'm in charge of overseeing the health and the medical for all of the dogs. And so basically what I do is I'm basically there all the time checking on dogs. Everybody comes to me if a dog has an issue, and I document it. And then I create vet lists for and prioritize based on who has a more pressing issue. Sometimes I have to do emergency runs to the vet. So I'll take a, you know, van load of dogs to the vet for whatever they may need, whether it be heartworm treatment, whether they need surgery, and, you know, to be spayed and neutered, and all of that sort of stuff.
Okay. And Mo, pit bulls and parolees in specific, why match pit bulls with parolees?
A parolee is somebody gets out of jail, and they have really no other way or means to get money. Or, you know, when you work with pit bulls and stuff, you get like this, like it opens your heart. And like to somebody who got out of jail or whatever, they kind of don't know how to interact with people that haven't been to jail. So it just kind of helps them work with themselves and then other dogs.
You've seen some pretty good impacts over the years?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really cool stuff. Now, we just got a comment from a listener who writes in, they are the American dog and long considered the nanny dogs to care for children. Dr. Buck, you're nodding at that.
It's true. If anybody's watched Little Rascals, Petey was a pit bull.
It's amazing how that's changed. I mean, like, we're a generation really removed from that. And, you know, I didn't grow up at that time. I don't know what would have been considered the dangerous dog at the time, the stereotypical dog. But you had a pit bull as this loving dog on this show. How did we get here, Dr. Buck, where people have these assumptions about pit bulls?
Well, unfortunately, it happens with a bunch of breeds. It used to be Doberman Pinschers, then Rottweilers. And now, you know, unfortunately, because they are a large dog with a large, strong jaw, no stronger than many other breeds. That's a misnomer, but because they are a big dog and they are, like Lizzie had said earlier, want to please their people, their strength gets exploited. So
they love to please. Lizzie, tell us a little bit about that. These are dogs that really love to please?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, every single time I walk into work, they're all just like wiggling, tails wagging. It's great to walk into every morning. Their attitudes, and even though, you know, they don't have a home, I mean, I guess their home is with us in the meantime, but their attitudes every day are just so amazing. It's what keeps us going every single day. The fact that they're trying to make us happy, it's amazing.
I'm not crazy, right? They always look like they're smiling.
Yeah, they kind of do.
They have that jaw shape. They look like they're smiling. If you've seen the show, you know, Mo's mom, Tia, the owner of Villalobos, you know, people know. They know Tia, and she was a victim of domestic violence. She told Syracuse Woman magazine, I just want to read this quote from Tia. She said, quote, "For years I felt the pain of broken bones and a bruised face, never knowing what I did wrong. I always apologized for him beating me. I would crawl back, wagging my tail, and forgive. So to say I can relate to what the pit bull dog is put through is putting it mildly. No matter how horrible I was treated, I always went back for more. Like the pit bull, I became my own worst enemy until I finally broke away and took off with my kids. But sadly, a dog can't just pack up and leave. So I stepped in to do just that, and years ago I was able to save myself. Now I want to do the same thing for these dogs." For people who have never met Tia, Mo, she seemed like an amazing person. Can you tell us a little bit about her?
She's awesome, down to earth, huge heart, huge heart. And she's a wonderful wonderful mom to me.
She's talking about these animals and the way she relates to them, though, and I'm thinking of the way the animals are abused. You know, so when we have this image of the animal being dangerous, unfortunately, it was probably abused and trained to be that way first. Yeah, Mo?
Yes.
Okay. And Lizzie, when a dog like that that wants to please, you know, you walk into work, they're wagging, they're smiling. But if you train it to do things that are harmful or violent, unfortunately, a dog that is wanting to please that much is probably going to do that very effectively. Yeah?
Yeah, I'm sure. And you know, every dog's an individual, so it really just depends. And breeding does play a large role in their behavior. And a lot of times their dog aggression can also be genetic and just due to poor breeding and such. But yeah, I think like what Dr. Buck was saying before, people exploit their traits and they use them negatively. I've also heard of situations though where they try to train a dog to fight and the dog won't, and then usually they just say they're unfortunately kill the dog or we end up with it.
Yeah, and much better situation for the dog there to end up with you. I want to grab a quick phone call. Dan in Brighton wants to weigh in on the history of pit bulls. Go ahead, Dan.
Yeah, thank you for the call. This is a great show. But it's just about if your people could talk or your guests could talk a little bit more about the history, because I've learned a lot from my daughter about pit bulls. She volunteers with them about 4 days a week. And I've just learned so much that pit bulls, you know, were raised as nannies, or that was their breed, and how good they are with people. And it's the owners, really the bad people owners, that have made them such a negative dog. And, you know, my daughter, she fosters pit bulls periodically and brings them to her house. And I've learned to appreciate them much more and respect them, because at first I thought they were a bad dog, but they're definitely not. And she was at the show that you were at last night, and one of her dogs are on the runway, as a matter of fact. And she's just down at Rochester Animal Services now working with some pit bulls. So.
Well, that's great, Dan, and I appreciate it. We're going to run out of time, so let me just jump in and ask, based on what Dan is saying, we're soaking up some of Pit Bull and Paroli's time here with Mo and Lizzie, but you've had a busy week. You got in Wednesday night. You went to Lollipop. Where else have you been this week?
We were at the Women's Expo last night at the Burgundy Basin, and today we were at the Rochester... The Verona Street Animal Shelter.
Okay. Moa, how's it been for you this week?
Long. Tired.
But good experience, I hope, in Rochester for you?
Yeah, absolutely. Really, really cool.
Well, and Dan in Brighton, he's right. I mean, sometimes I think, Dr. Buck, that the term pit bull, we should use maybe the full name of the breed. Mm-hmm. People just want to say pit bull. I think it's become a bit of a pejorative term.
I like to call them pibbles.
Pibbles. Or just little pits or pitties. But before we let you go, we just want to make sure our listeners know where they can find you. Lizzie, where can they find you and the show?
Like when it comes on?
Yeah.
I think 10 o'clock on Saturdays. this information.
We were joking about, like, people barely watch on demand. People watch everything on demand. They barely do appointment viewing.
Yeah, but it's every Saturday night, I believe 10 p.m. Eastern time.
And Mo, what would you say, just real briefly, about the goal of stopping the cycle of animal abuse and stopping the cycle of abuse in general? Are you an optimist now after seeing what your family has gone through, what you do at work? Liz, you're shaking your head, Lizzie. You're not an optimist.
It's some days I am, some days I'm not. It's tough. Just when you think, you know, you're getting dogs into their homes and you're like, okay, this is great, we're making a difference. And then we get back from an adoption trip and we have 10 dogs coming in 1 week that are emaciated, no hair, eyes swollen shut. And there's times when your faith is restored, and then there's times when it's just ripped away.
You feel the same way, Mo?
Yeah, absolutely.
More good than bad?
It's
depends on the
horrible,
day.
Yeah. It's horrible. It's sad all the time.
Well, thanks for the work that you guys are doing. And we've been seeing the stories told on pit bulls and parolees. really important stuff. And I want to thank you for taking the time to come in. Lizzie and Mo from Pitbulls and Parolees, thanks for being in Rochester, and thanks for coming on the show today.
Thank you for having us.
And Dr. Brenda Buck from the Animal Hospital of Rochester, thanks for the work you do and for helping some of our listeners this hour. Nice having you here.
Thanks, Evan.
Happy Thanksgiving, everyone. And let's take a short break. Coming back with Second Opinion Live, we're talking about food next hour. Stay with us.